Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
There's a verse in the Bible, in Ecclesiastes, that says, God has placed eternity into the hearts of men. Little wonder then there's so much interest in the work of Arthur Stace. From 1930 until the 1960s, he chalked the word eternity in beautiful copperplate script on pavements from Sydney to country New South Wales and down to Melbourne. At the turn of the millennium, the world saw Arthur Stace's work portrayed in lights on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. How many people that night realised that God had placed eternity into their hearts? Arthur Stace was an unlikely hero, an underclass battler, a former drunk, even a petty criminal, whose life was a bit rough. In a new book, we find out some more amazing facts about the story of Arthur Stace, including his efforts to get into the army, which also involved bending the rules. Mr. Eternity, the story of Arthur Stace, has just been published by the Bible Society of Australia. The co-authors are Elizabeth Myers, whose parents were close friends of Arthur Stace, and award-winning Australian author and historian Roy Williams, who joined us on Open House.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
I want to begin with where you've ended. The epilogue to your book, which is a wonderful book and I thoroughly recommend it, is to wonder about, in a sense, about whether the message of eternity would have the same impact today.
Arthur Stace, when he wrote eternity, meant the word in the biblical sense. So it was a one-word sermon from Isaiah 57:15, which in the King James Version describes God himself as the one who inhabits eternity. And in the sermon that inspired Arthur back in 1932, the Baptist pastor John Ridley emphasized, the sermon was entitled Echoes of Eternity, and Ridley's essential theme was everyone, every human being without exception has to face up to eternity and the fact that Christ is in control of it. So that was the biblical meaning that Arthur Stace took to heart and that he was trying to get across. Now, of course, the genius of his choice, obviously made through the Spirit, was that it's such a resonant word that it was capable of appealing not only to believing Christians, but to everybody. The proof of the word's popularity shows that.
And indeed, we shouldn't be surprised, not only from the Isaiah verse, but Ecclesiastes, God has set eternity into the hearts of people. And there's that sense that we wonder about it. So, yes, it's a genius word.
It's a genius word, and it's become ingrained in the soul of Sydney. But the point I was making in the epilogue was that Arthur and people like Ridley, if they could see now Australian society, would be both thrilled by the success of the Eternity Mission, but also, I think, puzzled and disappointed, because eternity in some cases has been co-opted for purely secular purposes, even by people who, you know, are fond of Arthur's memory and pay due respect to him. But the word has been used in all sorts of other contexts and for commercial purposes.
Our guest is Roy Williams, the author of Mr. Eternity, a book he's researched and written with Elizabeth Myers. Well, it was famously John Ridley who preached the sermon that you've referred to that inspired Arthur Stace to begin chalking eternity across Sydney, but of course it also inspired him to cease drinking. And I'd just like to talk a little bit about John Ridley himself, a Baptist who's serving in a city that's full of drunkards and, you know, layabouts. And here he is in his city tabernacle. Tell us a little bit more about Ridley.
Ridley's a fascinating figure. He served in World War. He was born into a very wealthy upper middle class family in Darling Point. His mother and father were scions of St. Mark's, Darling Point. They lived just across the road. Ridley's early faith was formal only. He was actually converted to evangelical Christianity at the tabernacle. The tabernacle keeps recurring in this story.
I see.
So in 1915, he heard this incredibly inspiring sermon by another Baptist pastor called William Lamb. And that was shortly before Ridley went off to fight in World War One.
Yes.
And he ultimately won the Military Cross. He was a genuine war hero, shot through the jaw and throat at Fromelles, you know, the legendary battle.
Yes.
Started the Anzac tradition on the Western Front, and came back a hero. And he had a mental and physical collapse, just as Arthur Stace did, because Arthur also served in World War One as a stretcher bearer, so they had that in common. They didn't find that out until many years later. They ultimately became good friends, but when Arthur went along to Ridley's sermon, he wasn't actually the pastor at the Tabernacle. He was a visiting evangelist at that time.
Yes.
So they didn't know each other at all at that point, but Arthur was incredibly inspired that night, and there's no reason to doubt that very night he went outside, found an old piece of chalk in his pocket, and wrote the word eternity on the pavement outside the Tabernacle in Darlinghurst, and that was the beginning of it.
I was fascinated to read about Stace's own Arthur Stace's own war record. He went. He was enlisted, and
yes,
your book records that they didn't think he was going to be of much great use as a fighting man on the front. Might have even been got in the way a little bit. So he became a bandsman. They recruited him to the band, for goodness sake.
That's right. It was quite a common thing, apparently, because Arthur was a tiny man, a frail wisp of a man. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have been allowed into the AIF according to the original rules of recruitment when war first broke out, but as things got more desperate, the recruitment rules were relaxed, and by 1916, when he joined up, they were taking virtually anyone they could get. Mm. In fact, it's clear that Arthur, and this is before his conversion, he, shall we say, misrepresented a number of facts on his AIF application form because he wanted to get in.
I see.
Funnily enough, a lot of desperate men in that time, and Arthur then was a derelict, unemployable in effect, really wanted to join up if only because they got paid relatively well.
Yes.
And
something of a journeyman.
He was one of those men for whom it was the last throw of the dice. But yes, he was appointed a bandsman, and I did a bit of research on this. Apparently it was often a common step from being a bandsman to a stretcher bearer.
Yes.
And that's what Arthur did. He served for a few months as a stretcher bearer on the Western Front in 1917 before he contracted pleurisy and was shipped back to England, where he recuperated.
Well, they saw great horrors, of course, the stretcher bearers.
Indeed.
And so that's another aspect of his story that we didn't know. Something else that I didn't realise until I read your book was that not only was Arthur Stace a chalker, and perhaps I ought to have known this, but in fact he became quite a celebrated speaker, evangelist.
Yes, indeed. The chalking was only part of his Christian life, certainly the most famous, but for many, many years he, for example, stood on the corner of George and Bathurst Streets in Sydney every Saturday night and preached in the open air. Hmm. And the accounts we have show that he was actually very skillful. Although he wasn't a well-educated man, he wasn't stupid by any means. He had a really good memory. He could recite scripture with alacrity. He had a great sense of humour, great sort of vernacular use of the English language, and was really effective as an open-air missioner. And he'd learnt from some of the greats, people like Ridley and another great man in his story, R.B.S. Hammond, the Church of England minister, and Cairo Bradley, another one of the great evangelists of that era. Stace knew them all, and he was a humble man, and he was prepared to learn from men who could teach him. There was no inverse snobbery in his nature.
Yes.
He would listen to men who were qualified and then try to emulate their example.
Yes.
He also did an enormous amount of really humble, almost anonymous charity work. Again, following Hammond's example. So he worked in soup kitchens. He went to visit alcoholics, you know, refuges, the leper hospital, the old one down in Little Bay. And he didn't like to make a fuss of any of this, but it's clear that he did it for the rest of his life. He was so grateful for his own conversion, his own new life in Christ, that he threw himself into all these activities.
Hmm.
He was always as poor as a church mouse, but he never learned to drive a car for the simple reason that he never had enough money to buy one. So he walked everywhere or caught buses.
Roy Williams is our guest on Open House. He's the author of Mr. Eternity, and Roy is an historian and author and a great storyteller as well. There's a time, there's a moment in the history of Arthur Stace's story that's really interesting that you tell in the book. Introduce us to Lyle.
Lyle Thompson, yes. Another great Christian man. His daughter, Elizabeth Myers, was my co-author of this book.
Oh, my word, okay.
yes. So Elizabeth's now in her mid-70s, and Lyle Thompson was her father. Lyle Thompson came to the Burton Street Baptist Tabernacle in 1951 as the new co-pastor. He was a young man, another fired-up evangelical, and he had a young family. He was married to May and had three children. Elizabeth was the oldest, so she was 9 when she came to Burton Street and met Arthur Stace, who by then was a long-time member of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyle and Arthur seem immediately to have hit it off. They saw each other as kindred spirits, you know, people who really cared about the down and outs, the destitutes in and around Darlinghurst and inner Sydney more broadly.
Mm.
And it was Lyle Thompson who ultimately persuaded Arthur to go public, to reveal his identity as Mr. Eternity.
How long had he been talking by this stage, 1951?
It started in 1932.
Well, there we are.
So he'd been doing it for 19 years when he met Lyle. Lyle very soon found out that he was Mr. Eternity because he saw him doing it one day and sprung him. But it took Lyle another 4 or 5 years to persuade Arthur that the public ought to be told. And by this stage, the Sydney newspapers were full of speculation. Now, who is this guy? The Eternity phenomenon was well known by then, by the early 50s.
Mm.
And people were speculating in the press about the identity, who this bloke is. There's some really funny snippets that we quote in the book. And Arthur would just chuckle to himself. He didn't want publicity. He was, an extremely humble man. But ultimately, it was Lyle Thompson who persuaded him to give his story to the press. And I won't tell the whole story of that because it's a beautiful story about how it came about that Arthur finally gave in.
Yes.
And then there was this daily, a Sunday Telegraph spread on the 24th of June 1956.
Yes.
He lived his last 11 years as a very famous folk hero.
Yes.
Especially in Sydney, but even in other parts of New South Wales as well.
So there's one other vignette from the story, from your book, which is worth retelling, just by way of teasing people to grab a copy. And the Bible Society has done everyone a great favour by getting you to write this book. And that is this. It's not just the Harbour Bridge and the famous Millennium thing where Eternity is part of our popular culture, but the artist Martin Sharp was compelled by the same message.
Yes, indeed. Martin Sharp is another great story, intricately linked here. He saw it as a child in the 50s in Rose Bay, was inspired by it then, and then came back to it after his own conversion to Christianity, another great story, in the late 70s, and started to base a lot of his artwork, his murals, his posters, around the Eternity theme. And there were subsequently tapestries made of it, beautiful works of art, and we got permission to reproduce some of them in the book.
Hmm.
Another, and when Martin Sharp himself died only a few years ago, at his funeral, it's a beautiful story, pieces of chalk were passed around Christchurch, St Lawrence, Broadway, very much Stace territory, and the word eternity was written all around the surrounding streets by the 800 or so mourners who'd turned up. There's a beautiful symmetry there. It's another fascinating little aspect of the whole eternity story.
Well, it's told well in Mr. Eternity, the story of Arthur Stace by Roy Williams, our guest, and Elizabeth Myers. Roy, thank you so much for being with us once more on Open House.
My pleasure, Stephen. Thank you.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.